DW Africa Link.
Hello, it's Tuesday the 11th of September. A very warm welcome to Africa Link. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Don't forget that we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to drop your comment and we will read it whenever we can. Coming up, Igbo leaders in Nigeria are meeting with the country's National Security Committee to ensure that the conflict in the plateau region between herdsmen and farmers doesn't spread to southern parts of the country.
The issue of farmers' herders' clashes has been a very fundamental problem which we have been having sleepless nights to ensure to find ways of solving this problem.
A new report by the Food and Agricultural Organization has said that 1 in 9 people of the world's population is forced to go without food.
Africa is one of the regions that's most affected by the rise in hunger. We're seeing increasing climate variability, and Africa has been hard hit in the last 10 years, especially with climate variability and extremes.
Also on the program, the International Criminal Court in The Hague has lashed back at the United States a day after the U.S. threatened sanctions if the tribunal investigated U.S. activities in Afghanistan.
These stories plus lots more coming up later on the show. But first, let's go for the news in brief.
DW News.
My name is Jen Nyingi with DW News. Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban has accused the European Parliament of blackmailing his country over its migration policies. Orban spoke at the European Parliament, where the lawmakers are set to debate whether Hungary should face political sanctions for policies that opponents say are against the EU values and the rule of law.
I know that you have already made up your mind. I know that a majority will approve the report, and I know that my speech here today will not change your opinion. You are going to denounce Hungary that rebelled and took to arms against the biggest army of the world, the Soviet army, and shed its blood for freedom and democracy, and when the time came, opened its borders to fellow Eastern German friends.
If tomorrow's vote for sanctions against Hungary is carried, the country could lose its EU voting rights. Ethiopia and Eritrea have announced that their forces stationed along the country's shared border will be moved back to camps to ease tensions. The rapidly warming ties between the two countries took another step forward today after the once bitter rivals reopened their key border points for the first time in 20 years. A UN report says the number of people who go hungry globally has gone up in the last 3 years. According to Food and Agriculture Organization FAO, 1 in every 9 people have no food, with the situation worsening in South America and most regions in Africa, as Cindy Holleman, a senior food security economist at the organization, explains.
There are 3 main drivers for the rise in hunger. One of them that's most important is the climate variability in extremes, which is increasing. But also we have conflict, and the number of conflicts has also been increasing. And when they have conflict and climate together, it's even worse. Many regions are also having problems with economic slowdowns, which is also creating problems.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Zimbabwe has declared a state of emergency in the capital, Harare, following 20 deaths and over 2,000 cases related to cholera. Columbus Mavunga with more from Harare.
Zimbabwe's new health minister, Obadiah Moyo, says unhygienic conditions have highly contributed to the cholera outbreak.
We are putting in solutions to the problem. We've put in place and requested our partners from the United Nations to give us assistance.
The UN Children's Agency said it is assisting Zimbabwe's government with hygiene and water provisions.
Columbus Mavunga there reporting from Harare. At least 45 people were killed, including several children, after a bus carrying pilgrims plunged into a valley in southern India. Witnesses say the driver lost control of the bus. The country has one of the highest numbers of traffic fatalities globally. For more news and information, visit our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jen Nyingi.
This is Africa Link coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. And as usual, a warm welcome to you listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We would like to acknowledge Rutareka Alex, who is listening from Kigali, and Torokon Harris, who is talking about merchandise farming as one way of remedying the shortage for food in Africa. Be sure to keep your comments running. We start in Nigeria, where Igbo leaders have been meeting with the country's National Security Committee to ensure that the conflict in the Plateau region between herdsmen and farmers does not spread to southern parts of the country. For years now, the conflict between the two groups has claimed thousands of lives and destruction of property.
This year alone, the conflict between Fulani herders and Christian farmers has taken six times more lives than the more highly publicized Boko Haram insurgency. In the absence of a comprehensive solution that addresses the root causes, violence is more likely to continue, as explained by DW's Oyesu Idris in Abuja, where the meeting is taking place.
Well, the objective of the meeting is to achieve peace in Nigeria, try to ensure that the killings that have been happening in the northern part of Nigeria did not escalate in the southern part of Nigeria, because presently there are more areas where these Fulani herdsmen can breed their cattle in the southern part, and they've been moving down there. And after rainy season, we'll see more influx of these people into the southern part.
And have you been able to talk to the protagonists of this particular conflict? I mean, the Fulanis, and what have they been telling you?
Well, I spoke to the chairman of the Fulani Cattle Breeders of Nigeria, called Miyeti Allah, and then the assistant secretary. What they are saying, that they've been approaching the people of the south, trying to see that there is peace between them. They know they cannot run away from breeding their cattle in that area, and they are not troublemakers, as people may have think. And they said, peace is the only thing that can allow them to continue their business, and they are ready for that.
The issue of farmers' herders' clashes has been a very fundamental problem, which we have been having sleepless nights to ensure to find ways of solving this problem. And the leaders from the southern part of the country, which include traditional leaders, religious leaders, we decided to come together and collaborate in order to ensure that there is a kind of understanding which at the end of the day will no doubt result into a peaceful coexistence between the farmers and the herders.
That was the head of the Fulani herdsmen group speaking to our colleague Oyesu Idris, of course, in my interview that I had with him. Now, Zipporah, the issue of land rights, that is grazing rights, and of course farmers, he is pertinent, you know, the many conflicts around Africa, not only in Nigeria.
Yeah, for example, in Kenya, where I come from, in northern Kenya, we have the Samburus and Turkana, who are always fighting over the same thing, land, water, pastures. It seems it's unending.
Yes, and I believe, you know, that problem of land rights, the conflict between farmers and herders, has been politicized to an extent that many politicians, regardless of the political divide, they tend to take advantage of the situation and play it in their own court ball, kind of.
Unfortunately, especially before the elections, it's when it actually comes out like this is an issue. So you can also join in the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
And tell us how you think it can be solved without necessarily people going at war.
And now to one of the stories making headlines around the world. The International Criminal Court, ICC, has said its work would continue undeterred after the US threatened to prosecute the court's judges if Americans are charged with war crimes committed in Afghanistan.
Washington is angry over plans by the ICC to prosecute US servicemen over alleged detainees' abuse in Afghanistan, a move they termed as illegitimate and dangerous. Tabea Gobelt has more.
The ICC prosecutors accuse U.S. troops and intelligence forces of committing war crimes in Afghanistan since 2003, including illegal imprisonment and torture of detainees. However, the U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton says neither Afghanistan nor any government signatory to the ICC statute had requested an investigation into what happened.
We will not cooperate with the ICC. We will provide no assistance to the ICC, and we certainly will not join the ICC. We will let the ICC die on its own. After all, for all intents and purposes, the ICC is already dead to us.
In reaction, the ICC has pledged to continue doing its work undeterred in accordance with the overarching idea of the rule of law. In a statement, it said, quote, "The ICC, as a judicial institution, acts strictly within the legal framework of the Rome Statute and is committed to the independent and impartial exercise of its mandate." The US, which has not signed up to the court, has always been critical of the ICC. Other countries, including China, India and Russia, have refused to join. In Africa, some countries have been calling for withdrawal from the court over perceived unfair treatment.
Tabea Goppelt with that report. And now, Zippy, interestingly, the US has come up with such a strong and regrettable statement.
Of course, and we know the ICC role and what it is doing.
Justice. And surprisingly, Bolton said that they will prosecute the judges, you know, of the ICC, if that were to kind of indict U.S. servicemen over crimes committed in Afghanistan. I should say, this is not my own opinion, but I mean, on Twitter, people are really livid and angry about the U.S. stand on this story.
Yeah, of course, because it's a bad precedent as well to other countries which are usually accused and then prosecuted. I think they should do something about it.
Anyway, let's leave matters of justice to the judges and go back to Africa for a while. At least 1 in 9 people of the world's population is forced to go without food, according to the new report released by the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO. In Africa, at least 236 million people faced hunger in 2017 alone.
Eastern Africa, which includes conflict-ridden nations like Eritrea and South Sudan, was singled out as the worst affected region, with nearly 30% of its people classified as undernourished. I talked to Cindy Holman, FAO senior economist, food security and nutrition, on the way forward to curb the perpetual food problem in Africa.
Africa is one of the regions that's most affected by the rise in hunger. We also see in South America and a stagnation of hunger in Asia. But again, Africa keeps coming out on top in terms of the most vulnerable and also the highest rises in terms of hunger.
Yeah, and that is exactly my question, like, why is the situation not changing in Africa?
Well, there are three reasons that are driving the rise in hunger. The first is conflict. And increasing complex and intractable conflicts, which is contributing to the rise in hunger. The second reason is the economic slowdowns in some countries. And the third is the increasing climate variability and extremes we see. But what's new is we're seeing increasing climate variability. And Africa has been hard hit in the last 10 years, especially with climate variability and extremes.
What is your organization doing on the long term to curb this problem? Because giving food aid is good, but for me, it's a little bit short-term.
Yes, and that's also what we're advocating. We do need to be prepared to provide support to the most needy when there is a climate disaster. Responding just to disaster is not enough. We need to address the symptoms. So from FAO, we're advocating first with knowledge. So part of the SOFI report is to bring the evidence to bear to show that we have to wake up, that climate is having an effect already on chronic hunger.
What can you tell the small farmer today? What can they do in order to avert VAT losses and to curb hunger situation?
Many countries in Africa are monoculture cropping, so they just rely on maize. It's really important to diversify crops away from those, because those are the most susceptible to climate extremes. But there's many other things that need to be done in terms of ensuring food stocks, community food stocks, as well as making sure that the most marginalized and the poor have access to credits so they can invest in their agriculture and make them more resilient.
That is Cindy Holman, FAO Senior Economist, Food and Security Nutrition.
Welcome back to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. And of course, a very warm welcome and thank you to all of you listening to us on our Facebook page. Frankie Madu from Nigeria, Waleku Nem from Southern Cameroon, Keep It Africa Link. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Kenyans grappling with high fuel prices that have led to a hike in prices of basic commodities.
When you go to buy something like unga, which is our normal food, so you'll find that the price is high. And also people, they have doubled the price.
Also on the program, we'll be hearing from an innovative young man in Cameroon who's making fishing boats out of plastic bottles in order to save the environment. That sounds interesting, Zip, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. You can do something out of plastics.
Instead of just drinking water and throwing the bottle in the gutter, like many people do.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Anyway, before that, let's go to Kenya, where the fuel crisis is far from ending as the country grapples with high fuel prices, which have also affected prices of basic commodities. This is because of government's plans to reintroduce a 16% value added tax on petroleum products. Long queues, frustrated drivers, and outraged commuters have become a common sight in the capital, Nairobi.
Kenyans who have to commute daily to and from work are finding life increasingly hard because they're not sure whether they will reach their destiny in time. DW's Andrew Wasike visited some bus parks in the streets of Nairobi and filed this report.
At a bus station in Nairobi, touts call out for travelers to board. But unusually, there are not so many travelers because of the high transport costs that have shot up across Kenya due to fuel shortages. Many vehicles now charge between 20 to 30 Kenya shillings, more than the usual fares, and at the moment, there are no signs that the prices will come down anytime soon. Maurice Omondi, a truck driver, says he has resorted to buying fuel across the border in Uganda, which is cheaper compared to the prices in Kenya.
In Uganda, fuel is cheaper than in Kenya, so I get my full tank in Uganda, come to Nairobi, and the same fuel will cater for my trip back to Uganda, where I will collect new merchandise to ferry to Kenya without visiting a pump in Kenya. I save 5,000 Kenyan shillings on every trip.
Businessmen have taken advantage of the fuel crisis and increased prices of basic commodities. That's why ordinary Kenyans like Paul Wesonga and Daisy Mudhoni want the government to intervene urgently.
When you go to buy something like unga, which is our normal food, so you'll find that the price is high. And also people, they have doubled the price. My message to our president is that he should find a solution, find a way of how they are going to get the revenue instead of burdening the normal Kenyan, because we are going to suffer more.
I think at the moment, with our taxes and everything going on in Kenya, it's too late. Our government has put us in debt, and they shouldn't have put us in this situation. And the only way we can get out of this situation is they'll put us in a different situation where we'll have to be saved by a different country, whether US or UK. So basically, we are doomed. The only thing, they can't raise taxes anymore. It's too late. So we're in a bad situation.
For Jared Okello, a legislator and economist, the current crisis is a result of Kenya's external debt that has accumulated over the years, especially with China.
Let's face the facts. We are here because of our penchant for loans. This is a country where every morning what the executive thinks is acquisition of loans and loan facilities from financial institutions, both locally and abroad. And this is a government that would always borrow from morning to evening. So firstly, we have to address these issues of loans. As you correctly put it, we are in a quandary if we don't address this. The rule of economics demand that you do not overtax the current generation for the comfort of the future generation.
Kenya secured loans from China to construct the standard gauge railway and to fix major highways. Kenya's public debt with China stands at $50 billion, and there are growing concerns whether Kenya will be able to repay the loans in the long run.
Andrew Wasike with that report. And as you've heard, you know, some of the Kenyans have to cross the border into Uganda to buy fuel at cheaper prices, yet actually that the refined petroleum products come from Kenya.
Yeah, and that is the other
How do you explain that?
Yeah, that does not really make sense to me, Isaac. And of course, making the journey to Uganda and back, for me, that beats logic.
And reading Twitter this morning, it was a topic that was awash everywhere, you know. Consumers, the ordinary Kenyans, complaining about the 16% hike in value-added tax, which the president has to sign and becomes a law.
Yeah, hopefully. And I think he will not sign it. Probably he will not because of the pressure from the Kenyans.
And of course, consumer organizations, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, tell us what you think about the stories that you're covering, including this particular one on fuel prices. How is it where you are? Let us know by going on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we will read your comments whenever we can on live on air. We still have much more for you, so don't go away.
Africa on the move.
And now to another interesting story, Zipporah. For our Africa on the Move segment, today we have this story from Cameroon, where one innovative and social entrepreneur, his name is Ismael Esome Ebode, makes unique plastic boats, by tying plastic bottles together.
Yeah, and yes, Isaac, by using bottles that would otherwise choke the country's drainage system, is helping to save the environment as well as save the fishermen the costs of repairing the normal wooden boats.
This is the story of Ismael Esome Ebode, as narrated by Blaise Young.
A river of plastic bottles chokes drainage system in Yaoundé, Cameroon. When it rains, the entire neighborhood is flooded. Ismael Esome Ebone and his crew don't work for the sanitation department. They're volunteers for a local NGO called Madiba and Nature. For them, this is a gold mine of valuable raw material. One day when I was walking back from university, it started raining heavily. I ran for shelter to wait it out. That's when I saw heaps of plastic bottles clogging the bridge. I was shocked. I thought, surely something can be done with all these bottles. Who will clean them up? I saw it as a challenge. Ismail, who studied engineering, eventually devised a way to convert the bottles into something practical and useful. After being cleaned and checked for quality, the bottles become the basic building blocks for constructing what the organization calls eco-boats. Close to 1,000 bottles are needed for a 6-meter canoe-shaped vessel. It takes about 3 days to make one. Ismail and his team hope their initiative will have a far-reaching impact on the environment. So far, they have made around 30 eco-boats. Fishing boats in Cameroon are typically made of wood, which makes them expensive to repair. Another reason eco-boats are such an attractive alternative, and not just for fishermen. One of Ismail's boats can be found in Kribi, a beach resort about 300 kilometers southwest of Yaoundé. Valerie Christian owns a small bar next to the beach. For a small fee, tourists there can take the 20-kilogram boat out on the water. Valerie manages the rental service.
It's really great. It's a lot of fun, easy to handle, and it also helps me. It's a little boost for my business. When Madiba and Nature first came here and offered me the chance to manage the boat rental, I wasn't sure it would work. But now, the people see it and are really impressed. And it all happens without any advertising on radio or television. It's just word of mouth.
Hundreds of bottles filled with nothing but air. That makes the boats light and easy to handle. And while they aren't exactly watertight, it would be very difficult to sink one. We have an ecotourism program. People can register via our website, Madiba and Nature. And we also have people coming in through international links, like visit.org. It's a platform for social impact travel experiences that could help increase our earnings. In 2014, a regulation was put in place in Cameroon that required plastic bottle manufacturers to take responsibility for recycling their products. But 4 years on, Ismail's boat-making initiative is still making a rather significant contribution towards improving the situation in the country.
Blaise Eyong with that report. And if you'd like to know or learn how Ismail Esome Ebode makes the boats, just visit our Facebook page, DW Africa, or our webpage, dw.com/Africa, and perhaps you learn a thing or two on how plastic bottles can improve on your income. There are beautiful videos how he does it.
Focus Europe.
Before we leave you, let's bring you this story from Europe that is also making headlines. It's about Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orbán, who is in Strasbourg, where he's defending his policies to the European Parliament. Orbán has provoked the EU with anti-migrant measures, which include prison for anyone found helping an undocumented migrant.
Hungary could lose its EU voting rights if enough EU parliamentarians vote in favour of political sanctions against it. And I was speaking to DW's Max Hoffman, who's been closely following the proceedings, and he starts by telling us what the EU stand means for Hungary.
Well, the EU is made up of very different institutions. We're here at the Parliament today in Strasbourg, where you will also find all kinds of views. After all, Viktor Orban's own party has some seats in the European Parliament. But it seems that a majority here of the parliamentarians are in favor of, punishing Viktor Orban for what he's doing back home, especially on migration, but also regarding the rule of law, and trigger what is called the Article 7 procedure. It's also called the nuclear option, because at the end of this procedure, there is the possibility of stripping Hungary of its EU voting rights. It's not very likely this is going to happen, because as I said, it takes years and other countries can veto it. Nevertheless, of course, it's a huge signal and very tiresome for the country involved.
And the big question is, where does this leave the migrants should this go through?
Right. It's unlikely this will change anything in regard to the migration policy, because we've been seeing a compromise emerge already in the last weeks and months. It doesn't seem like the other countries are willing to force Hungary to take in any migrants. It seems that the compromise is that countries will have a choice whether to take in migrants or to pay some contribution, to contribute in another way to helping the EU securing its outer borders, redistributing migrants within the European Union with some financial support. But let there be no mistake, the new emerging common denominator within the EU is that they want to prevent as many migrants as possible even reaching European shores. So that's the new goal, because that would solve some of the problems they have here, the biggest problem being the redistribution of migrants.
Max, tell us, what are the other sticking points on which Hungary does not agree with the EU?
It's the rule of law. It's the way that Hungary has been handling NGOs, cracking down on them, for example, or how it's handling the free press, also cracking down, and how it's interfering with what's supposed to be an independent judiciary. That is really what is triggering this procedure. There was a lot of there were a lot of problems because of how it's handling migration in the past, but this is the main reason why in Strasbourg, where I am, the parliament is debating to trigger the Article 7 procedure.
Max, as we know, the EU is facing the other hurdle of rising far-right groups who insist Europe is being invaded by migrants. Has the EU addressed this issue?
Well, that's a very complex question. What I can tell you is that it has changed the political mood. It has changed the consensus. You have a lot of conservative parties that are not right-wing populists that are trying to imitate those right-wing populist parties. It's the reason why migration is one of the most contentious issues in the European Union, although there really isn't a problem like there used to be in the past. You have significantly lower numbers of people arriving on European shores, but especially for right-wing populists, it's very important to have this topic on the agenda, because that's how they get their voters.
I was speaking to DW's Max Hoffman.
Now, as promised, before we let you off the hook, we read some of the comments on the story that we did on the shortages of fuel in Kenya. Hafsa Kirawa says, I feel so sad for my country, Kenya. Things are getting worse by the day. And for Trocon Harris, he is in Liberia, he says, a gallon of gasoline is sold for $3.6, the equivalent of 540 Liberian dollars. Keep that bit flowing on our Facebook page as usual, DW Africa. And there we come to the end of the program. On behalf of our colleagues in the studios, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.
DW.
made for minds.